Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and tonight's going to be a very exciting show. Trying to get everyone in and live. I believe that one of our guests, area code 541, is certainly live, and we'll get you introduced here in just a moment. Trying to get Kurt McKenzie called in. How about Red? Red, are you live?
I'm live.
Well, Red, while we're waiting for everybody else to get called in here, if you would open us up with a prayer, I sure would appreciate it.
Very good. Heavenly Father, we come to you humble, knowing that we cannot survive, we cannot be effective in this world in which we live today without you, without your input. So we ask that as we have our discussion, our conversation tonight, that your Holy Spirit would guide us into truth so that we can identify, so that we can discern truth, and then have the intestinal fortitude to get the truth and get it out to our fellow man. We pray, dear Lord, for this nation. Our country is in turmoil tonight. I just watched a newscast, and the people were in the streets by the thousands. And we know that there's people out there that are very disturbed or having a hard time making it. And we just pray that you would help us be effective in trying to bring about lawful government, honest government in this country. Bless our effort tonight, and we'll give you the praise in Christ's name. Amen.
Thank you very much, Red. Kurt McKenzie, you have a live mic, I do believe.
Well, hello, I'm here.
Well, we're glad you're here. I believe Glenn has got a live mic, but I don't know about Richard yet.
So, well, let me go ahead and introduce Glenn then.
I have at it. Please do. Please, set the stage.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Listen, Sheriff Glenn Palmer, was talking to Richard Mack, Sheriff Mack, at an event where he and I were both presenting, and I was explaining to him the idea of the event we were going to have in Siskiyou County. And he says, the more he learned about it, and the sheriff's panel, he says, you've got to have Sheriff Glenn Palmer there. He's the best constitutional sheriff in the country. So he gave me the phone number, and I called, and I think I got Glenn at home before he'd even left for work, and before the end of the day, he had committed to coming and joining the show. He's a sheriff in Grant County, Oregon, which is quite a ways away from Siskiyou County, some 6 to 8 hours if you drive there. And he and his wife made the trip down to join the event on October 26th, which was launched at Defend Rural America, and was one of the 8 now fairly famous sheriffs that stood tall for the Constitution at the event. And every one of them, including Sheriff Glenn Palmer, had a standing ovation. He's a great individual, a great American. I'm certainly glad to know him and happy to introduce him to the show and to the audience if they don't already know about him.
Is that my cue?
Well, you're on.
All right. I thought you'd elaborate a little more, Kirk. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show tonight, and to be honest with you, it's the first time I've ever been other than at a live event to where we've opened with a word of prayer, and that means quite a bit to me.
Well,
Glenn, why don't you go ahead and fill us in? Yeah, go ahead.
Sheriff Palmer, just give us a little background on yourself. You know, how you got into this situation, maybe how you came to really being passionate about defending the Constitution. Give us a little background on who you are, because our listeners, not all of them have necessarily seen the videos or read all of Kirk's material. So give us a little background.
Okay. My name is Glenn Palmer. I'm the sheriff in Grant County, Oregon. East Central Oregon, a county of about 7,000 residents, 5,000 square miles. Very rural. Majority of our county is comprised of what we call public lands between BLM and the U.S. Forest Service. And what really got me involved in this was I had quite a few people that came to me back. It was actually about a year ago today. It was October, November of 2010, and a lot of people complaining about how federal officers were pointing guns at people, seizing some of their property, stopping them for illegal stops. And I got to thinking of it, and I, you know what, this isn't right. And we've got to, and I, you know, I've read the Constitution, I've taken an oath of office, and I've taken the, I've subscribed to the code of conduct through the state of Oregon, through our Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. And And you know, when I had the people come to me and tell me what was going on with them, I looked at it and I said, you know what, I wouldn't put up with that if one of my deputies treated someone like that. Why am I letting some other federal agency treat the people that I'm elected to represent them? Why am I allowing them to treat them in that kind of a fashion? They had guns pointed at them. They've been threatened to be tasered. And the list just goes on. They're closing roads. Our economy, we've got some of the highest unemployment in the state of Oregon. We've been within the top two or three for several years. If we're not number one, we're number two or number three as far as unemployment. Our forests and our public lands are in a terrible state of affairs. There's huge catastrophic forest fires. Miners are having mining claims taken away from them. People being shut off of our public lands, roads being closed with no justification or legal authority to do so. And I thought, you know what, that's my job to keep that from happening to the people that put me in office. And I've taken the oath of office. I've read the Constitution. I think I'm right on the money. And I truly think that if I was in the wrong, I think the federal government had put me in my place. And to this day, they haven't done that. And I stand on the Constitution, and I stand more so on my oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution and the people that have elected me to office. And as long as I'm the sheriff of this county, I'll continue to do so.
Well, we certainly are very pleased to have some sheriffs who care about the Constitution and care about being a statesman and defending the rights of the people. And believe me, it is a pleasure to speak to you, and we're looking forward to hearing a lot more from you this evening. Kirk, I believe Sheriff Mack is also now got a live mic, so would you like to get him introduced?
I absolutely love to do so. Welcome on the show. The Sheriff Mack, for most of the audience, probably already knows him quite well, but I'll nonetheless give background. He was a former sheriff of a small town in Graham County, Arizona. And one day he had an epiphany while giving a traffic ticket to a mother that perhaps the role of the sheriff was more important than traffic tickets, and there was something more to abiding by, you know, the Constitution and law and actually protecting the welfare of his constituents. I believe that led to a complete reorientation of his thinking as sheriff. And when the federal government passed the Brady Bill and the federal agents began demanding that the sheriffs, you know, enforce that, he decided to sue the federal government, and the case eventually went to the Supreme Court, and he won. So here is a sheriff from a small town in Arizona that actually defeated the federal government in a U.S. Supreme Court decision that was absolutely a landmark decision for the 10th Amendment rights of the states. and basically makes clear in no uncertain terms that the federal government cannot force state and local government officials to enforce federal legislation. I've had the pleasure of watching him present on multiple occasions. He has become a timeless advocate of the role sheriffs can play in defending our property and our rights, and has crisscrossed our nation I don't know how many times, but over and over and over again, to educate sheriffs and grassroots organizations alike about their 10th Amendment rights. And he's currently working to assemble a national sheriffs conference where he can bring sheriffs from across the country together, an effort that I wholeheartedly support. I'd like to turn the conversation over to you, there, Sheriff Mack.
Well, thanks, Kirk. I will tell you, this has been a wonderful experience for me to once again listen to a constitutional sheriff as Sheriff Palmer explained his position in standing for the Constitution. And I will tell everyone listening to this program right now that the solution was just exemplified by this great sheriff who has the courage and the conviction to keep his word to his people when he took his oath of office to uphold and defend the United States Constitution. That is the answer. That is the solution. And regardless of whether or not the federal government ever tries to stop any of these sheriffs from keeping their oath, he's doing the right thing. And we need more sheriffs that are not so concerned about re-election, but just simply keeping their oath. Because the ultimate beneficiary of this is we the people. And it comes down to the old saying in law enforcement, the motto is to serve and protect. Well, what is it that sheriffs actually serve? Well, they serve the people. And what do they protect? They protect the God-given rights as expressed within the Constitution of the people, of every American. And when we give sheriffs all across this country to know and realize that it is their duty to protect their citizens from all enemies, both foreign and domestic, and that they are, that the sheriffs are willing and courageous enough to interpose themselves on behalf of the people, even if it's against other government, then we're going to win this. This is the ultimate solution. This is the epitome of state sovereignty. This is what the 10th Amendment is all about. And James Madison said that the 10th Amendment is based on one principle, and that is that the states will erect barriers against the encroachments of the national authority. That is what Sheriff Palmer has done. And when we get hundreds of sheriffs across this country doing just that, we take America back tomorrow.
And one of the interesting questions that I, you know, I asked you at the event prior to the launch was, what percentage of the sheriffs that you talk with are in rural America versus urban America? And I recall that you indicated that nearly 100% are rural. I've kind of come to the conclusion myself, the battle is in rural America. What are your thoughts?
Well, I would hope that other sheriffs would get on board, but for instance, Sheriff Baca in Los Angeles County, he makes $256,000 a year. He's a politician instead of a protector of the people. He's worried more about keeping that big paying job than he is about really protecting the people and keeping his oath. I hope that sheriffs from all over the country, but we're not going to get Dallas and we're not going to get some other big cities, but Sheriff Arpaio is from the fifth largest city in America, and right now he's investigating the President of the United States, and that's quite a historical and constitutional concept. So there's probably a few exceptions. Another great example of a sheriff doing his job is Sheriff Tom Dart from Chicago, the second largest sheriff's office in the country, and he has refused two different times to execute foreclosures on citizens there. So that means he's telling the banks and the judges that he won't do their dirty work for them. So I'm going to have to break back off that number a little bit. I'll probably go 98%, 99% of the constitutional sheriffs who are really standing right now and doing something are rural sheriffs, and, of course, Sheriff Palmer, being from a rural county, is an example of that. But I'm going to tell you right now, it doesn't matter if you're in a rural town or an urban town or anything in between. We've got to have sheriffs willing and courageous enough to keep their oath of office, follow the Constitution, let everyone know that you're going to enforce the Bill of Rights within your county. And that's the ultimate goal, and that's why we're having that national sheriff and constitutional sheriff convention.
And maybe I can
convention?
Add. Yeah, go ahead.
Hey,
the question is, when is the convention? Yeah.
Right.
The convention is January 30th. Sheriff Palmer's on our board of directors, and he will be there. Most of the sheriffs that were at your Siskiyou County conference are going to be there. Half of them are on the board. And you might want to look at our website, CSPOA.org. It stands for Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officer Association. But you can also go to another website. Might be easier to remember. CountySheriffProject.org. You can donate at either site. You can donate at SheriffMatt.com. You can donate at CountySheriffProject.org or CSPOA.org. We need everybody to donate. We're going to pay for the sheriff's travel expenses to be there. We're going to pay for their hotel. We don't want the sheriffs to have to go ask permission to attend this seminar. We want to leave them without excuses. And so I believe this is the most important thing anybody could donate to. It's more important than who your next president is. It's the most important freedom-enhancing gathering since the Founding Fathers signed the Constitution. This is how we can take America back, county by county, sheriff by sheriff, and I'm proud of the sheriffs that are standing up right now. We need to continue this momentum, and this is a grassroots effort, and that's why we need people from all over this country to help us financially to pull this off.
If I could, perhaps I can ask Sheriff Palmer and then also you, Sheriff Mack, to comment. Take some very specific examples of some of the egregious behavior happening by government and illustrate exactly what it is the sheriffs can do.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind right off the bat is some of our road closures here within our county on the National Forest System. Some of the issues that we've been dealing with, and this isn't something that I've done any research on or anything into great depth or detail, and I think the public knows a lot of it as well, and they've seen this happen from probably back in the late 70s, early 80s. We started noticing just a few road closures, and they were just a pole barricade, or they'd berm the road, or they'd trench it, and they denied people access on some of this in the name of forest management. And then the next year there'd be a couple more over here, and the next year a few more over here, and the next year there might not be any for 2 or 3 years, and then all of a sudden there'd be 5 or 6, 10 more, 15 more, and the next thing you know, everywhere you're going, you're just restricted to what we call a two-digit road, which are the main roads. I had a retired forest ranger come to me, and I quizzed him on him, and he says, well, what's happened is they've been systematically shut off and closed, and the Forest Service had no authority, no purpose, and no basis for the closure. And these pole barricades have gone up, and it's basically taking away something that belongs to the, it's a taking. And they have no authority and no jurisdiction. They're public roads. When you ask them about them, they can't come up with any kind of a justification or a reason. And what I look out here on the state highways and on some of the county roads is when you go to close a road, you have to have a reason or a justification. There has to be a car wreck, or somebody strung a fire hose across the road, or a tree's across the road, or there's some kind of a hazard, or if we're doing resource damage, say the road's wet from the spring runoff, and they don't want to damage the road, I could understand a closure until the road dries out a little bit. But these roads have been systematically taken away from us. And they don't have any basis or purpose. They haven't done a NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act. We can't find NEPAs done on a lot of these roads that have been closed. You know, it's just slowly the erosion of our personal freedoms to travel, and I can't continue to let that happen. So I'm right now we're fighting against the travel management plan that's going on here on the National Forest System. They've restricted any crossroad travel, shut down a whole bunch more roads. We have absolutely no resource damage here. There is very few places here in our county where there might be a little bit of erosion, but they want to condense everybody down into a smaller area, and what that's going to do is definitely cause some resource damage to where they will restrict it even further. And I'm dead set against any closure or any taking of any property or any land. It just doesn't settle well with me.
Well, is it possible, for example, the sheriffs to lead a group of citizens with bolt cutters and go take down some of those barricades? Or, you know, it sounds like the barricades, a number of them have been in place. Is there ability to actually remove them?
You know, I think over time that's going to happen. I don't think the, you know, I'd hate to sit here and say that it's going to happen in my time as being the sheriff in this county, but I'm pretty sure that the way the public's being treated and what's going on at the national level, I think a lot of people have had a crawl and they've had enough and people are tired of it. And I think if people would help us out and get us moving and get their sheriffs motivated and get them on board with the CSPOA, you know, we can't do this with just two or three sheriffs. We need more sheriffs. We need more police officers. We need more support. You know, and I encourage people to give what they can, help us out, and, you know, I'm here for the people that have elected me into office.
Sheriff Mack, maybe I could ask you the same question. Do you feel there's actually a specific action that the sheriffs could take to actually turn some of these around?
Yeah, and I think Sheriff Palmer is already doing some of it. He put them on notice. He issued a letter to them challenging the Forest Service authority to do these things. I think that's the first step. I believe it's going to happen a little bit sooner that more overt action is going to take place. For instance, turning on the water to the San Joaquin Valley in California. The federal government's had a habit and a horrid history of turning off water to farms and destroying land and the farm industry in Klamath Falls, Oregon. They've done it now in San Joaquin Valley, where we get the entire country gets 50% of our fruits and vegetables and nuts. And I believe that sheriffs are going to have the courage to take their posses and go up there and turn the water back on. I think there's going to be times, because I believe exactly what Sheriff Palmer said is absolutely going to happen, where we do have hundreds of sheriffs with the support of their people putting the federal government on notice. If you close roads, we're going to go open them. In Arizona, when I was sheriff, we had a bridge that got washed out during a flood. The Army Corps of Engineers refused to allow the county to repair the bridge. We weren't going to do a new bridge. We were simply going to put the bridge back exactly like it was before the flood. And they wouldn't allow it. And so finally, the citizens who lived on the north side of the bridge, this is the San Jose Bridge in Solomon, Arizona, on the east side of our county, they were getting so upset about not being able to get their kids to school on the other side, on the south side of that bridge, that they were really clamoring to the county commissioners, the board of supervisors. So finally, after months and months and months trying to work with the Army Corps of Engineers, the board of supervisors finally voted unanimously just to fix the bridge. And the Army Corps of Engineers heard of it, and they came in and threatened to arrest the county commissioners. And they said, well, we also will arrest anybody that's at the bridge site trying to repair the bridge or dredge the river. That's the Gila River. And so I called the Army Corps of Engineers into my office, and I said, if I catch you trying to arrest anybody, I'm going to arrest you. And I laid the law onto them. I said, look, I'm easy to get along with, and I'm a nice guy. I says, but I'm not bluffing on this, and this is just how it's going to be. And so they threatened to arrest everybody and to fine the county $50,000 a day for every day that we were in violation. Well, I set up security at the bridge site, at the construction site. This was a very minor repair. It only took about a week or so to fix it, and we fixed it. And nobody went to jail, and the county did not pay one dime in fines, and everybody went home, and our people were served and protected, and the bridge was repaired. And this is the type of thing that we have got to do. We've got to have the courage to stand up to the federal government, mostly call their bluff, but be ready to back it up. I think there's sheriffs ready to do that, and I think there's a lot of people ready to do it. And the one thing I was really impressed with is that Sheriff Palmer has a lot of support from his citizens. And, again, that is the answer. Citizens supporting their good constitutional sheriff, and the CSPOA now creating and educating more constitutional sheriffs, just like Sheriff Palmer, all across this country, to where we have an army of sheriffs standing against the incursions of the federal government. My lawsuit bears this out, that it is our job to do that, and it also proves in my lawsuit, in the landmark ruling, that the federal government doesn't have the authority to tell us what to do. They're not our boss, and it is our job to erect barriers against the federal government. So it's all lawful, it's all constitutional, and it's exactly what the 10th Amendment is all about.
Now, in the example that you gave, you actually had a county commissioners that were actually with you on this. So on the one hand, you had a kind of a political side of this saying, hey, we want the bridge rebuilt, and then you became the enforcement part of that political decision. Is that the kind of thing that's going to have to happen in order for this to completely work?
I hope so. I hope the county commissioners will be brave enough to enact legislation and to pass resolutions that the sheriff will enforce. And I know a county in Union County, Tennessee, where the county commissioners said the Second Amendment will be enforced and protected as written in the Constitution, as written in the state Constitution, and as intended by the Founding Fathers. And the sheriff says, yes, absolutely, that's what we will enforce. We had Nye County, Nevada do the same thing with Dick Carver back in the mid-90s when they passed a similar resolution, and he stood up to the federal government, who would not allow a road to be fixed or repaired after a flood that was on U.S. Forest Service property that they claim was their property. Well, it's not their property. It's Nye County, Nevada's property, and the citizens used that road for 100 years, and Dick Carver got on his bulldozer and fixed that road over the objections of the U.S. Forest Service agents, but he had 150 people there ready to take action against the Forest Service if they didn't get out of the way of the bulldozer. The repair took less than a couple hours, and Dick Carver was county commissioner, God rest his soul, but this is the type of thing that we need to do, and yes, if we have to take more action, if you ask me, if it's necessary, then we do. But I believe more than anything that when the sheriffs get on board this freedom train, this movement for freedom will be, most importantly, it will remain peaceful and effective. And so that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a way to keep this movement peaceful and effective and immediate. And the more sheriffs that we have get on board, the more immediate and effective this is going to be.
Now, let me take the Siskiyou County situation for a moment, if I could. And, you know, we have a situation where not only is the Sheriff John Lopey of Siskiyou County standing tall, but we have seven other sheriffs from neighboring counties, including Oregon, in support of that effort. In fact, I believe there's now a much more cooperative effort going on. But we have the county commissioners, for the most part, on board as well. And they were demanding proper coordination with the federal government, with the U.S. Forest Service and so forth, and are pretty much being told to go pound sand. What would be your advice where you have now a sheriff who definitely is a constitutional sheriff, you have a county commissioners that are behind this, and you know that group of people in Siskiyou County actually took a non-binding referendum vote called Measure G to ask whether the dam should stay in or the dam should go out. 80%, nearly 80%, 78% of the people said dams in. So you have the community, you have the commissioners, You have not only the sheriff, but you have regional sheriffs behind this, and yet they're being told to go pound sand. What would you recommend?
Well, that's a good question, but I wouldn't let it go. I would not allow the federal government to ignore the people on this issue. I'm not sure I know all the dangers of that are going to be associated with it. They're trying to destroy the bridge there, right?
Yeah, well, it's
the dam.
There's four dams. One of them is in Oregon, and three of them are in Siskiyou County. And the if you go to defendruralamerica.com, there's a documentary that actually does a pretty good job, a decent job of informing people of the issues. But there's the bigger issue beyond the dam is the implication on the community. You know, it's a community that's already been impoverished pretty much by the Spotted Owl debacle. A lot of people, I think unemployment's over 20%, the underemployment's over 30%, property values have been knocked down by over 50% because of this whole damn situation. I mean, it goes on and on and on, the full story. But that's the kind of current situation there. And, you know, the people want the dams in, and the situation is that pretty much the federal agencies have formed this kind of, I'll call it a cabal, they call it a stakeholder group, that all of which have an interest in taking out the dams, but none of them actually live there, and the people who do live there seem to have no voice, and they're trying to have an impact on this process and having a difficult time.
Well, I would certainly enlist the help of the state legislature to see if they could do anything to pass a state nullification ruling on this. We have about 35 states now that have passed some sort of state nullification laws, either about illegal immigration or in some instances, like Montana did on gun manufacturing within the state. So I would like to see the legislation be there in the state to give the sheriff a little more teeth.
This is California.
I know. But even California has addressed some of these state nullification rules. But then if that fails, I would also like to see, even while they were waiting for that, and you're right, in California that they might be waiting a long time. But I'd like to see the other sheriffs, and there's a lot of good sheriffs in Northern California. Even in Fresno, Sheriff Mims, female sheriff there, she's been wanting to do something about turning the water on in the San Joaquin Valley. And so I think if the other sheriffs start seeing that they're our local officials and that the sheriffs are united getting behind this, I think that they could pull something off. But I wouldn't be surprised to see the sheriffs and the people standing in the way to prevent the dam from being destroyed. You know, this is them protecting their land. This is them protecting their families. And they have every right to do that. And again, if the sheriffs are with the people in the civil disobedience that might take place, it's going to remain peaceful, and it's going to be a very effective civil disobedience. And so, yes, sheriffs can be involved in that, and it's okay for sheriffs to tell the federal government, no, you're not going to do that here. We're not going to allow it, and we're here to protect the people. And it's just like Sheriff Palmer just said, as long as we're the sheriffs of this county, we will be protecting this. We will be doing this for our people. And the theory of interposition is definitely something that needs to weigh in on this conversation.
Well, I think that the key there is the organization. You know, it's basically, there is an element of organizing here where we have to get the sheriffs have to come together, the people have to come together, the county commissioners have to come together and work in a united fashion to make this happen. And that was really one of the extremely exciting things about the Siskiyou County event, because we had over 1,000 people attended that particular event. I think it's the largest grassroots event in California. Every objective we set for that was exceeded by far. We had over 50 different groups support us. I would guess, I asked the question actually of the crowd, how many of you are from outside of Siskiyou County? And I would guess somewhere between 1/4 to 1/3 of that audience was from outside of Siskiyou County coming in to help a sister county. So a lot of that cooperative effort is happening. I know that the people are having the support of the people is extremely important, and perhaps I could ask Sheriff Glenn Palmer, and then if you'd like to, how is it we can help you? I know we have to stand together. I kind of asked both of you at separate times the same question. How is it like we get into Patrol Park with you? I mean, That's, I think, one of the things that always happen with big government. Big government comes and pounces on an individual, individual politician, individual sheriff. How is it we stand together, and how is it that we can help the sheriffs?
Well, Kirk, one of the things that happened here in Grant County with me was when I put the Forest Service on notice, community came together with a little bit of money, and they purchased a one-page ad in the newspaper. And we could only put 600 names on that page. And after that came out, my phone literally rang off the hook, and people were angry and people were upset that their name was not on that list. And I think with the federal government seeing that,
that was a list,
they're not just
supporters.
Contending with Glenn Palmer, the sheriff. They're contending with just about every Tom, Dick, and Harry here in our county, that our livelihood depends on these public lands, and our mere existence depends and relies on these public lands, our employment, our schools, our city, our county. It's very imperative that the sheriff gets the support of his community, or I don't think it's going to work. And I have just been overwhelmed, and with the amount of support that I've had from the people. And the people need to be able to trust and rely and depend on their sheriff to stand for them. And stand between bad government and what's right. And I've taken my oath of office, and it's something that's near and dear to me. And till the day they lay me to rest, that's where I will stand.
Now, the ad, if I understand correctly, was the list of the people in the community that stood behind the sheriff.
Yes.
Stood behind.
That was a full-page ad. It was a full-page ad in our newspaper, and there wasn't enough room to put everybody on there. And then when other people found out that we did that, they were rather angry with me that they didn't get to put their name on it. They knew nothing about it. And this all happened within a week. I mean, this hit really hard and really fast. And they still support me to this day. There's a few people, you're just not going to get them, but the majority, when they see when the chips are down like they are here in our county, and people are tired of seeing where this is going and in the direction it's headed, I think I have a duty and a responsibility to step up and take a lead on this and defend the people that have put me in office.
Sheriff Beck, let me ask you the same question. I know that you have this national conference, which you're raising money for. I am complete supporter of that. I mean, what a phenomenal effort. I know that you're trying to pull sheriffs from across the country together to a major conference where they can all discuss these ideas and begin to form an even broader base of unification. I think this is an extremely important effort. I know that's something that we can do. I know that you're looking for donations. I've made donations. I encourage everybody that's listening to the show to make donations to that effort, because this is, I don't know, frankly, of any better way to spend a buck than to help this effort go forward. In addition to that, what other ideas would you like to suggest that we can do to help our sheriffs?
Well, the full-page ad that Glenn was just talking about was something that just absolutely touched me when I saw it. I actually went to Sheriff Palmer's County, and we did a rally there for him, and I spoke there. And when I saw that ad, I said, man, oh, man, this is the answer. And for the sheriff, I think that another way to engage the people would be by forming a posse. Sheriff Arpaio has the largest posse perhaps in American history. He has 3,000 people on his posse. I think it's good to have a posse that's organized, that's readily called upon. The posse that's, if you ask me, it's a group of Minutemen, today's Minutemen, that they can be called upon to help with sandbags or directing traffic or any time that there's a national disaster or flooding or anything else, that they can be called upon immediately to respond and help the sheriff maintain order or protect the people. I'm a real advocate of the posse, and I'd like to see that happen. Sheriff Arpaio's posse?
That's a volunteer posse?
Yes, all volunteer. A lot of your search and rescue squads are formed entirely of posses, in Arizona especially. Our search and rescue squad was entirely volunteers and a posse. And it's not a bad word, and there's some sheriffs that are afraid of, oh man, it's going to create liability. Baloney. The sheriff of Pyle's posse is very well trained. They're not peace officers. They're not arresting authority. But the sheriff's posse in Maricopa County patrols all the malls in Maricopa County during the Christmas holidays. And they've really helped a great deal. And so the posse creates a strong working relationship between the sheriff and the people. And we cannot forget that is we the people is the basis of this entire government. The people are the one that bestows the power on the sheriff, not the other way around. And they bestow power on government, not the other way around. And so if the people want to get involved in their local government in that regard, that is fine. It's constitutional. It's proper. And it's the way it should be. And posses have been around for centuries in America, and there's no reason that anybody needs to be afraid of that. Again, it's under the control of the sheriff, and they can get as involved as the sheriff dictates. And he can definitely let them do as much as they want or keep them tied up as much as he wants. That's up to the sheriff.
I like that
definitely
idea.
Believe in that.
One of the things that I preach is this idea of communicate, coordinate, and cooperate, C3 project, I call it. And principally, I've been referring that to the grassroots organization, but increasingly I'm realizing the benefits of that approach to unifying media, unifying sheriffs, unifying others. So, for example, to build on your idea, if you were able to get, say, 3,000 volunteer sheriffs that were deputized, then we would give them a real-time communication system through Twitter, text messages, and emails where you could actually send out an instant message and it would go out to all those people instantaneously.
Yeah.
Can I interject for a minute, Kirk?
Sure.
This is Terry Dodge, Sheriff Mack. I got to welcome Glenn Palmer, but I didn't get to welcome you on the Walls in Our Minds, and I'd just like to do that first. But there's, you know, back at the time of the founding of our country, there were a number of institutions that our founders put into place that came out of the grassroots of the fact that the people really had to organize and they had to communicate with each other, and they raised up their sheriffs out of really their well-regulated state militia system that were organized through the churches. And a lot of that type of institutions got supplanted by, you know, the National Guard movement, a lot of top-down things. And I don't believe that any of this was by accident. I believe it was really by the nationalists that wanted a more centralized planning, more centralized government. And what you guys are really doing is getting back to a decentralized situation, and you're really trying to go backwards, and which to me is forwards, but you're trying to reestablish the relationship between the sheriffs and the people. And right now, you know, the whole police officer thing, when people are driving down the road and they see a police car, instead of thinking, oh, wow, I'm glad to see them, that I feel much safer now, they feel like they're threatened. They feel like they need to be aware, because really that policeman's there to come down on them, not to secure them or not to work for them or not to protect them. And what you're talking about, Sheriff Palmer, is the people actually saw that you are somebody that they can trust, and that's why they stood up. That's why they stood up around you. And I've been trying to figure out how to get people to take a stand and get off their couches and put down their remote controls and stop worrying about who's winning the football game or their video game, and to recognize the importance of taking a stand around people who are in elected positions that are willing to defend the Constitution. And that's a great challenge. Having a voice like Sheriff Mack has been a great contribution to restoring our republic. And we need more voices like that, and we need to support those voices. And so, you know, the idea of the posse, you look at Dr. Edwin Vieira, who wrote the book Constitutional Homeland Security, and he refers basically to what would have been a well-regulated state militia as a citizens' homeland security association. And we need to get back to that. We need to raise up these kind of groups, but they need to know what to do. People constantly come on this show that call in or in our chat room, and they're constantly looking for what can I do? What, you know, tell me what to do. They want solutions. They want to know how to take their country back. And there needs to be some leadership from these sheriffs in helping the people know what they need to do. And, you know, you can't be a top-down organization. It needs to be a grassroots effort. But you can sure help coordinate that and encourage people and give them the opportunity to know that it's okay to do in my county. But you need to define the limits of that, because I know a lot of sheriffs and a lot of police officers don't want the public getting involved because they can mess things up. And I'd like for you guys to kind of talk to this a little bit. So I'm kind of setting the stage for, you know, give me some feedback. Give us what you want the people to do, what you don't want them to do, and how they can best serve their county and their sheriff.
I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, do it, Glenn.
You know, there's something that's that I've got to reflect back on, and there isn't one person or one group that asked me to do what I'm doing today. I got into the Constitution and I read it. And I'll tell you, folks, if Glenn Palmer can read the Constitution, and it doesn't take a lawyer, it doesn't take a dictionary, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to pick it up, to read it, and be able to comprehend what the Constitution says. And I would challenge everybody to study it, read it, take an hour, go through it.
Especially the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, and And the other good read is the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. What I would ask that if people wanted to help is get in and meet their sheriff and find out where they stand and encourage them to stand up for their oath of office, and even ask your sheriff, did you take an oath of office? Can I see it? If he does have an oath of office, it should be right on his wall in his office. He should be able to show it to you. If not, it should be in a file cabinet somewhere readily available. And I would challenge them, if they don't uphold it, if they're afraid to step out because it's too political or that they're not going to get reelected, then what I would encourage you to do is look for a sheriff that will stand up for the Constitution and what his oath of office dictates that he should be doing. And I just can't stress more upon it that the oath of office is probably one of the most important things that we subscribe to. And when you do take the oath, it's for life, and it's not something to be taken lightly. And I think that if people want to get involved with their sheriff, they need to make themselves available. I don't think the sheriff may go out and ask here and there. But if it's something that you're interested in doing, make yourself available and go in and sit down with your sheriff and meet with him and introduce yourself and tell him what you're all about and tell him that you're there for him and encourage him. Offer to help. And, you know, if he takes you up on it, then, you know, make yourself available to him and follow his direction or his lead. So, you know, Mac, I don't know if you want to weigh in on something else that I might be missing here, or?
Well, you're not missing anything, Glenn. The foundation of all of this is the oath of office. It's really whether or not each and individual sheriff will look at the Constitution, look at his oath of office, and take it seriously. And yes, everyone should be getting to know his or her sheriff. Go in, do what Glenn said. Hey, take him some cookies and go see what he's up to and see what the sheriff's concerns are. Ask him about the oath of office. Ask him how he intends to keep his oath of office. Ask him if he needs any volunteers or help to start a posse. Ask him if he's going to the National Sheriff Convention, the CSPOA, Constitutional Sheriff Peace Officer Association, convention on January 30th. Get a fundraising event to make sure your sheriff is able to attend and that he's willing to be there. We are planning to have 150 to 200. We'll take more. That's okay. We have lots of people who are saying, hey, I'm going to fund my sheriff. I've had at least 10 different people say, here's the money for my sheriff. That's great. That's what we want to see. But regardless, everyone can donate and contribute something to this cause. This is the most immediate and powerful solution to the problems that are affecting us and facing us as a country today. The constitutional sheriff is the answer, and to have that convention with these constitutional sheriffs is going to take some financial support and help. So any of you would like to donate, please go to CSPOA, CSPOA.org. It's real easy to get there. If you forget CSPOA, then go to SheriffMac.com. You can make any donation there that you want, and would be happy to have it. If you don't want to do credit card, just write a check or send gold or silver or cash, whatever you want, to CSPOA, 112 Ridgewood Drive. That's 112 Ridgewood Drive, Fredericksburg, Texas, and the abbreviation for Fredericksburg is FRBG. So Fredericksburg, Texas, 78624. The zip again, 78624. And I think that address is on the website as well.
I posted it in the chat as well as the links. Boy, we're just about an hour into this show, and we've got a lot of things that I really would like to cover, and I hope you guys will be patient with me. One of the things that I want to get into before too late in the show is to talk a little bit about grand juries. We've got Red Beckman here online with us, too, which he hasn't spoken since he said the prayer at the beginning of the show, but Red's a pretty good expert on grand juries and got a lot of experience there and has been preaching for many years that people need to realize that they have the right and the authority to judge the law, and that nobody should be able to control that grand jury besides the grand jury themselves. And one of the things that I'm very curious about is what kind of influence does a sheriff have on grand juries, whether it's in their county or their district or the state? You know, what authority do you have to influence those juries? Could you guys address that? Perhaps, Sheriff Mack, it might be something you want to start out with.
Well, I think that is a subject that's still being researched. I don't know enough about it. What I have asked people, and I'll ask this to Red, and Red's a friend of mine, that we need to see some historical evidence, support about how the sheriff would get involved with the grand juries. I know that in most places where there are grand juries, the county attorney is in charge of the grand jury, not the sheriff. I would like to see some sort of historical evidence as to how the sheriff is to be involved in those. I don't believe that's a topic that most sheriffs know or understand, and I certainly don't. But I do know this about the sheriff movement, that none of this is going to work, that the state sovereignty movement, that the movement for freedom in America is not going to be successful if we don't have our sheriffs on board. I don't know where the sheriffs line up with the issue of the grand jury, or citizen juries, but I do know that they will not work without the sheriff involved. And we can probably, if we have constitutional sheriffs, we can probably make them to where they're not that necessary, because the Bill of Rights is going to be enforced. And there's something else that Sheriff Palmer's County did about 10 or 11 years ago, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, but his county voted to be a UN-free zone. And this is the kind of thing that is happening in that county, and this is the answer. And you want to stop Agenda 21, then it's that kind of a referendum from the people that will make it happen. And sheriffs knowing and understanding that it's the United Nations and our own federal government that want to disarm us, and that they want to take our land, and that they want to destroy the food supply. And so there's a lot of things going on that I think come ahead, maybe a little bit ahead of the grand jury deal. But I'm willing to learn, and I think a lot of these sheriffs are. And so if somebody wants to do a half-hour presentation at the Constitutional Convention about grand juries, if you can document that, I'll ask the board of directors, with which Glenn Palmer is one, to see if that would be okay to have that presented there. But the main thing is the oath of office, the Bill of Rights, and the constitutional sheriff protecting the same.
Well, Sheriff Palmer, if you had comments you wanted to add there, jump in. I've got a list of things I'd like to just kind of go over on this topic.
I've got into the grand jury issue a little bit about convening a grand jury, and there isn't any sheriffs in Oregon that would that were able to help me out with this. In fact, they discouraged me. And in Oregon, the grand juries are generally convened by the county prosecutor. So that's pretty much where I'm at. But I have made some inquiries about where a sheriff can or does he have the authority to convene a grand jury, and with everything else that's on my plate, I just haven't had time to dive into that one yet. So I would like to learn, and I'm willing to learn anything that I can on it as well. So,
well, Red, I'm gonna throw some things out, and then Red, I'd like for you to jump in after I get through going through this list. Red, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. My first question was about the sheriff being able to influence the calling of a grand jury. I know that most grand juries are called, although the prosecutor may convene them, I believe that a bill of indictment comes out of a judge generally that calls that grand jury. I'm thinking that a sheriff can have a lot of influence on a grand jury, even if he doesn't have the right to call them, even if he doesn't even if he's not involved in convening them. They should be able to make suggestions as to what a grand jury might investigate by approaching the prosecutor or approaching a judge or approaching the grand jury themselves, requesting to be able to testify before a grand jury or to provide evidence to a grand jury. Or there's another side of it that I believe a sheriff should be able to do, and that is to hold a grand jury accountable. And I'm not just talking about the jury itself, but I'm talking about the grand jury process. What we're finding is, this became a big issue over in Monroe County, Tennessee, with Commander Walt Fitzpatrick, if you guys are familiar with that particular case, where they found that a jury foreman, and the law, the state law, was that you can't serve on a grand jury more than 2 years. And they found this jury foreman had been on this one jury as a foreman for 26 consecutive years. The judge just kept reappointing the same guy in violation of the state law. Well, to me, a county sheriff should have been able to watch that, and that's something that they should have been able to file charges on and to hold them accountable on. That judge probably should have been kicked off the bench. They went to the adjacent county, and they found out that the foreman on that grand jury had been there for 15 years. And now we're finding that sort of thing's going on all over the country. Well, isn't that something that, even when you look at the misprision of felony situation, where somebody knows there's a law that's being broken and they're in an official capacity and they don't do anything about it, a sheriff can at least go to somebody and inform them that this situation is going on and have a great influence on a grand jury just by holding them accountable. So I don't know if either one of the sheriffs want to make comments.
I wouldn't disagree with that. But again, I'm like Sheriff Palmer. I have a subject I have not delved into. I've had lots of people talk to me about it. I've asked people to show the evidence that the sheriff is supposed to get involved in grand juries more. I haven't seen it to this point, but I'm open-minded, as I know Glenn is, and so I'm willing to learn about it, and I'm willing to have people train us on it, but it's got to be not pie-in-the-sky stuff, but it's got to be real, supported by documentation, historical fact, whatever. If somebody can show me the pudding, I'll be glad to look at it.
Sheriff Mack, you know Elo Jones, do you not?
Who?
Elo Jones, the director of Fully Informed Jury Association, FIJA.
Oh, yeah, of course, sure.
Well, Red was a great inspiration behind FIJA. He wasn't the founder of it, but it probably wouldn't be in existence if it hadn't been for him motivating some folks to do that. Red, I'm going to be quiet and let you talk.
That's something rather dangerous to do, tell Red that he can talk.
Red, I've heard you talk a lot, and I haven't seen anything dangerous about it yet.
Yeah, well, here's what we have to comprehend. Of course, the Fifth Amendment requires the grand jury to return an indictment or presentment. And so the grand jury was in business long before we had a constitution, long before we had a war of independence. And so historically we had grand juries. But here is another situation where we get to the point where we have to become aware of the fact that the American people are the problem, not the politicians, not the judges, not the, the scoundrels that are, leading us right down the wrong trails over and over. We have a tendency to forget that these people all went to the same education through the same education process that the rest of us did. And of course, we hear a certain amount of talk now about sovereignty with the states. And the legislatures are talking about sovereignty. Well, that's the wrong place to start. It should start with we the people as individuals. We the people, when we understand our position as kings and queens, we're not public servants, we're not government. We are the power, and that's why the Declaration the Declaration says that deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. We've got to recognize that the unjust powers that are being exercised and have made us so uncomfortable are being approved by a whole horde of a massive amount of Americans that have absolutely no comprehension of the fact that they, as individuals, are to be sovereign. In other words, I've said this many, many times. In 1976, I heard Claire Kelly, and some of you know who she was. She made the statement. She said, sovereignty is best defined by understanding that he who has the final say on the law is the sovereign. And so how many people in this country right now recognize the fact that we the people have the final say on the law? No, it's the Supreme Court that has the final say on the law. And, of course, I've had a major argument with the court system on this. I sued a federal judge in 93. The case was docketed in August of 96, and it hasn't been heard yet. It's still docketed. You can't find it, of course, because they'll never hear that, for the simple reason that I brought out how that federal judges are no different than the janitor that sweeps the floor after everybody leaves in the evening. He is a tax consumer. And he has a conflict of interest when it comes to deciding what the law says concerning the individual and concerning the people. They are all public servants that are drawing a paycheck. You have to suspect that they are going to protect the government. They're going to vote for the government. They're going to do everything in their power to keep government in the position of the sovereign. And so until we get the American people to recognize, you hear people in the Tea Party and such, different groups, and they'll say, we got to bring back our republic. They don't even know what a republic is. They don't know the difference between a republic and a democracy. And, of course, what we have talked about here a little bit is the difference. You see, the sheriffs haven't, they don't know the law. They don't understand the grand jury. How many different laws are there out there? How many things that were common knowledge back there 225 years or so ago? And we have turned them around totally. We've got the opposite idea. And of course, one of them is the fact that initially in this country, we lost our republic. We lost it because we quit requiring that all voters, the only ones that had the authority to vote, were people with property. They had to be freeholders. And you just stop and think about it. We've got millions of people in this country that don't own property. They have no intention of owning property. They have one goal in mind, and that is to learn how to better milk the federal government and the people to where they don't have to work, they don't have to be creative or anything else. They are basically dependent upon the system, and they can go to the polls and vote. That didn't happen back there a couple of hundred years ago, and so that's just one of the things. When the freeholders held the vote, when they had the vote, and all, it was a different situation because the tax consumers, their conflict of interest couldn't come in and control things. Now that isn't all where we gave our republic away, but that's one of the main things that has happened to get rid of our republic and go to a democracy. But anyway, I'll stop there. Other than that, you know, we need to foster and cultivate an awareness that every single one of us, every American out here, we're all, you might say, terminal. That's a term we use around my place, my family, right at the moment, because we have a cancer situation in the family. Well, everybody is terminal. We're all going to have to give a report at some point as to how we invested our lives and our mental powers, our muscle power, and all the rest of it. We're going to have to give an account. Every one of us are establishing a record that we are going to take with us when we leave this life. And so this is a great incentive, I think, to be more involved in this process of trying to restore honest government, a government with integrity and respect for the individual. I think this is a great incentive that we really need to recognize, but you don't hear anybody talking about it. I refer to the prophet Isaiah in the Old Testament. God communicated with him and said, I need a man. And Isaiah said, here am I, send me. And he went out and he warned his countrymen of the dangers that they were headed for, that the enemy was going to come in and they were going to be punished and pay for their sin. Anyway, Isaiah did his job so well, but his message was not accepted. But when he stepped across into the next life, he took a tremendous record with him. And so this is what we all have to keep this in mind when we are talking about all this stuff. Sovereignty. God intended for we the people as individuals to be sovereign. And I've already taken too long here. I feel very strong about this, the sovereignty of the people, and we've got to get this across to the American people out here before we can make this system work the way it should.
Gentlemen, we want
I sure appreciate you sheriffs being here.
Absolutely, and we want you sheriffs to know that we want you to be as powerful as you can be, and we want to give you the information that you need to do your job as strong as possible. And if I need to come to that conference and do a presentation giving citations and facts and the history of the grand juries, I'll be glad to do that. But I think Elo Jones might be more capable, and I'll be glad to extend that invitation if she's not listening right now. She knows that we're on this show and has been on this show as a guest many times, and she may very well be listening. But I would think that Elo Jones would do probably a superior job of making that presentation. But we want to provide you with information, and I'm going to be quiet now and give you an opportunity to make comment, and I also want to ask if it's okay if we have a couple of questions from callers.
If you have somebody ready to ask a question, you better go now because I'm actually driving from Arizona back to Texas. I had some business for the last couple of days in Arizona, so I'm actually on the road, and I've kind of lucked out being able to be on the show this long with my cell phone, but pretty quick, I think I'm going to go into a dead area where my cell phone's not going to be working. So if you have anybody who wants to ask a question, they better hurry. If at least it's of me, and I certainly know that Sheriff Palmer can answer any question, too.
Area code 484, you have a live mic.
I don't know whether that's me or not, Terry, but my name is William Taylor Ryle. You may remember me from the Continental Congress.
Absolutely.
In Pennsylvania, going back to the early law and history in Pennsylvania, the sheriff, according to the Constitution, was responsible to call the jury from the landholders, as Red was talking about, the voters, the electors. And the foreman was then picked, and beyond that point, the people on the grand jury and the petit jury, for that matter, managed the jury. It is, as Red says, the individuals are sovereign, and the jury is made up of those citizens in the county. Does not extend beyond the county. And if you look at the federal constitution, these crimes that are dealt with according to the federal constitution are done within the county in which the crime has occurred, the jurisdiction of the county. Once the juries are called, it's the duty of the sheriff to protect those jurors. That's the duty of the chief executive officer, the sheriff of the county. In Pennsylvania, the history is very clear. And so I would suggest that the solution is, as I have proposed in the conference, as you may recall, Terry, that having citizen grand juries and petit juries that are done according to the law is an important part of the remedy. The sheriff's courts are key as well. But the sheriff in Pennsylvania has a responsibility. We've lost all of that. As far as the district attorney, the chief prosecutor, that's exactly what the district attorney is. He's an officer of the judicial branch as an attorney. He can't possibly be in the executive branch, not lawfully. And yet they have self-imposed themselves as the chief law enforcement officer in the county. That's just not true. The sheriff is, in today's terminology, the chief law enforcement officer in the county, and that's supported by Anderson on Sheriffs in multiple sections. And Red's right, we need to educate the people, but the sheriffs are so key, and the juries should be active and should be working for the people and, frankly, indicting those in government who violate their oath of office.
Thank you, William, and good to hear from you. And sheriffs, maybe you want to turn this around and ask a question of William, or vice versa.
Well, I'm gonna probably have to leave the rest of it to Glenn. And Glenn, it's been a pleasure to be on with you tonight. I look forward to seeing you soon again. And thanks for being on the board of directors. And everyone, once again, please go to cspoa.org, cspoa.org. Make a donation. The solution is in your hands. Look down at your hands and see that your hands are busy in this holy cause. I'm asking for your financial support to help us make this Constitutional Sheriff Convention a reality. It's the most important place you can spend a dollar right now in anything going on in our country. And again, having a constitutional sheriff is more important than who your next president is. This movement, you don't have to wait for the next election. We can get this done now. So again, Sheriff Palmer, it's a pleasure to be with you again. And thanks for having me on tonight, Kurt and Red and all of you. Thank you for having me. And I'll see you at the Freedom Gates.
Sheriff Mack,
thank you very much
for joining
Sheriff
in.
Mack. Kurt, did you have anything more before Sheriff Mack leaves? Or?
No, Richard, I want to thank you so much. And again, I remind the audience, I think the audience already knows, but my gosh, what an incredible man. And all the effort you've been putting in to come up with solutions from your perspective, I think it's tremendous. And I appreciate your participation in the show tonight.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. And we'll bid you all a good night. See you soon.
Take care, Mac.
Thank you.
Did anyone else have a question of me, Terry?
I don't think so right now. William, thank you very much. And area code 928, you have your hand raised.
Yes, I do. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, hi. I'm actually running for Apache County Sheriff in Apache County, Arizona. My name is Jeff Christ, and I want to just thank Sheriff Palmer and, of course, Sheriff Mack, who's just left the program. Thank them for their service and for their being an inspiration to, I'm sure, quite a few more people around this country to get involved and to, you know, if we're going to fix Washington, we have to fix our local governments first, and I think it starts with the county sheriff. And the one question I had for Sheriff Palmer is in your efforts to go up against the federal government, have there been any whether it's against your office or personally, any retaliatory activities taken place by any entity of the federal government, whether it be IRS or FBI or anything like that. Have you been put in a position personally to defend for yourself?
No, there hasn't been, and I really didn't anticipate any. And just to give you a little bit more on what got me to where I am today, historically this office in this county had a cooperative policing agreement with the United States Forest Service for law enforcement services on the National Forest System's lands. And that came up for renewal. And I got to thinking about that contract, and basically I tried to negotiate a new contract with them, and I listed about 10 things that I would like to see that they sign a contract with me and not me sign their contract at their, that I would be at their beck and call. But I turned it around and I said, well, I have these issues that I want to insert into the contract that you now work for me, or you will be doing some of these things that I would like to see done. And of course I was turned down immediately. And then I chose not to sign the cooperative policing agreement. I, in fact, put a letter out to the Forest Service that said, from here on out, this day forward, all law enforcement activities will fall underneath the duties and the responsibilities of the sheriff or his designee. And to this day, I stand firm on that. I've also asked for where the Forest Service gets their constitutional authority to have law enforcement within my county. And to this day, they haven't been able to answer that. There are some people in our community that do not believe what I'm doing is right, or that I have the authority to do that. There are some of my staff that don't feel that I have the authority to do that. In fact, I ended up placing my undersheriff on leave for going against my directive. As far as any other government agencies, there hasn't been anything. You know, I don't think that they would want to do that. I think they're smarter than that. There's some people that don't care for me, I guess. But, you know, I wasn't very well liked when I ran for sheriff, I don't think. There's still a lot of people. You have about three different kinds of people. There's people that love you, the people that don't care, and the people that don't like you. And it's just one of those things that, you know, I've stood up where I believe and where I think I know that I'm, well, I don't want to say I think, I know that I'm right. Where I've taken my position on this, and to this day I truly think that if I was doing something wrong or it was against anything at the federal level or at the state level, I think the federal government would have stepped in and tried to stop me or put me in my place, and to this day it still hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's the main thing I was checking to see if they were doing anything now. Apache County, we had 500,000 acres of our national forest go up this last summer in the Wallow Fire. And prior to the Wallow Fire, when I would talk to groups and things of that nature and express views and opinions such as yours and Sheriff Max, as far as the sheriff is the ultimate power and we could take our roads back and you know, do stuff like that, I got a reception of looking out at the audience, and it was like deer caught in the headlights. I mean, it was very scary, and I actually changed my pitch a little bit to just stick to the major issues of reduced response time and, you know, sheriffly stuff that people think is what the sheriff mainly does is law enforcement. And after the Wallow Fire, after the fire, it changed quite a bit. And the people's attitude. So I think that now they're starting to realize that, wait a minute, there has to be somebody that can help us. And it's just a shame.
And you know
that
what?
I'm sorry.
You know what? Can I interject something here? I want you to, and don't worry about what the law says. Worry about what your oath of office says. And that is probably the most important document, that when you raise your hand, that is what you're subscribing to, and that is what you're telling the constituents putting you into office, that is your duty and that is your responsibility, and the laws come second. Stand up for what you believe in and stand between bad government and the people you're there to protect or their constitutional rights, and I think that you'd be solid on a foundation that nobody can take that away from you. And I don't think you'd be, I'm giving you bad advice on that. It's very important that you look at your oath of office and you understand what it says. And the last few words are the most important, and it's so help me God.
Absolutely, and I think it's that oath that even as a police officer or a deputy, not even an elected official, when you take your oath, or even whether it's a small municipality or a little fire district or something like that, I think people just don't listen to the words that they're taking in that oath, where they are defenders of the Constitution and have a defend the people's rights. And it's just it befuddles me to realize that there, most people may be well versed in the Bible or something of that nature and read War and Peace or big books and can't take time to read the Constitution, which you can do in about an hour or so, and it's a living document. You can read it. Each time you read it, you get something different out of it. And, it's just a shame that people aren't. And just like Sheriff Palmer said, that there's people in his county that probably aren't behind him or don't believe that he has that power. And that's a shame. It's a shame that we can't get people to realize that they are the power to be in control of their own destinies. We just had an election here on last Tuesday, on the 8th. Less than 9% of the county came out to vote. And, I mean, that's pathetic. Of course, that's just my opinion. But anyway, I appreciate you allowing me to ask a question, Sheriff Palmer. I appreciate what you're doing in your county. I hope that I'm successful in my election next November, and that we could possibly meet, join forces, and take back this country one county at a time, just like you and Sheriff Mack are talking about. But if anybody's interested, my website is sheriffjeff.com.
I'd like to jump in. We got Sheriff Gil Gilbertson that's joining the call. He's from Josephine County, Oregon. Gil, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Just fine. Go ahead and jump in.
Hey, Gil.
Hi, Glenn. How you doing?
Good. Good to see you.
Yeah, I've been listening to you guys, and I wish I could have got called in earlier because I wanted to say hi to Sheriff Mack as well. But we're fighting the same battles here in Oregon. Glenn has articulated very well. The way I see this issue is it needs to be addressed at the top level. We got some really nice people, U.S. Forest Service and BLM, working here on the ground. There's a few obstinate ones, but some of them are really trying to do what's right, but they're being told by the higher-ups. In fact, I went in to ask about them harassing one of the miners in my area, and I was told by the U.S. Forest Service that their attorneys told them not to discuss anything with me, that I needed to file a Freedom of Information request. Well, after I scraped myself off the ceiling, I wrote an article in the newspaper, and they called me and wanted to talk. So let's shut the sheriff up. And they answered everything I wanted except where their authority came from. And I think that's the root of the issue here. What's happened is over the years, the Constitution clearly has defined the Congress as making all the laws. The judicial doesn't, and the executive is not supposed to, but the president, in fact, this has bothered me. In the last 3 weeks, I've heard our president now on two occasions say that he's going to usurp Congress. He's going to usurp the constitutional way of making law, and he issues out these executive orders, and other presidents have done the same. Well, these executive orders are the boss telling the subordinates what he wants. Well, then these people form all these different entities, DEQ, EPA, IRS, blah, 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 blah. And they write their own rules and regulations, and then they enforce it as if it's law. They circumvented Congress entirely. And I think that's why we are where we are today, is they've cheated the system. And, sheriffs are starting to wake up to this. I just wrote a 13-page document on how they've done it. starting from the time that we broke away from the British Crown up to today. And I'd be more than glad to send that off to you. But to me, that's the root of the problem here, is our federal government, our central government, has certainly overstepped what the constitutional view or the constitutional rules were when they were established. And I think it's gone on for so long that people accept it as the norm. You know, there's 32 law enforcement agencies, federal law enforcement agencies in the United States today, 17 of which are armed and have the power of arrest. You know, I remember when I first started in law enforcement, FBI agents could not arrest somebody. They had to take an officer with them. They weren't allowed to carry guns until J. Edgar Hoover blackmailed, cajoled, and twisted people into accepting what he wanted. These administrative rules are not supposed to be enforced as law. Congress clearly states that. A state cannot give Congress more power. The Congress cannot give the power of making law to these self-developed organizations such as DEQ and so forth. So to me, that's the root of the problem, and that's kind of where I'm taking the issue, albeit I'm wrestling with the U.S. Forest Service in land control right now. So Glenn and I are facing the same issues.
May I ask a follow-up question then, Sheriff Gilbertson? You know, it's the same question I asked at the earlier part of the show, is specifics. Give me a specific problem that's occurring in your county or in Siskiyou County or in Glens County, and what specifically can the sheriff do, or the sheriff in conjunction with the people and the county commissioners, what specific actions can you take? And then the second follow-up question is, then what can we, the people, do to support you in a meaningful, tangible way?
Let me answer the second question first, if I can. Stand behind your sheriff. You know, ask your sheriff the tough questions. Does he believe in the Constitution? And he doggone well should, because he took an oath to uphold it. You know, I'll admit, when I took oath of office 5 years ago to take this position, I thought I knew what that meant. Little did I know how far-reaching that authority and that responsibility actually would take me. If somebody would have told me 2 years ago I'd be writing these documents or I'd engage in these kind of conversations, I probably would have shook my head and just walked away thinking, you're nuts. But after researching it, because of the problems that were caused by the U.S. Forest Service, they had some, in my opinion, rogue rangers that just intimidated people. To give you an example, in my area, this is what's happened. They harassed. In fact, I just got a case that was closed. I got the ruling on that from Douglas County, which is just north of us, and it was a similar situation. The U.S. Forest Service wanted to basically shut this guy down, this miner. He's 85 years old. So they told him they wanted $4,000 for a bond, and he had to upgrade his plan of operation. He's 85. He's kind of a slow-moving guy. Well, they went ahead and just confiscated his stuff. They dismantled and burned his buildings that are private property. They are constantly violating their own, federal government is constantly violating their own regulations and rules. Well, this 85-year-old man took him to court, plus the ranger he cited individually as being a part of it, and the court agreed. And the court ruled in his favor because he did not have
due process. It was due process. Bill.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, had they done it correctly, had they gone to court, given him his opportunity to explain this to a judge, the only way they could have won is if they got a court order. They didn't do that. They just took the shortcut. And they were going to do that here in my county. They're closing roads. For the federal government to take land, we're talking 5,000 or more acres, it has to be roadless. That means there can't be any roads on it. Well, they have been doing road decommissions. In fact, in 1964, the USGS reclassified roads, if you would, to fit that agenda. So it's not just one organization. There are many of them working in concert from different directions, different levels, different timetables, just all it does is it confuses everybody. It overwhelms them, so they just walk away from it. You know, somebody just mentioned a little bit ago about some voters. I was in Iraq, and it was about 70% of the people at the risk of death, and that was a serious consideration over there. They stood up and voted. Here in the United States, 20 to 40% turn out to vote. Folks, if you want to know why we're losing this country, why we're losing what the Constitution provided for us, why we're losing what so many Americans sacrificed for, go look in the mirror. You need to stand up. You need to vote. You need to tell people. You need to tell the government. The government works for you. We sheriffs work for you. And our job and the oath we took is to follow through with that oath. Did that answer your question?
Well, let me take you back to the first part of that question, though. That's specific. Let's take land closures. What do you think, as sheriff, that actually you could take to begin to either stop it or to begin to, even better yet, reopen roads?
Well, first off, I'm not going to recognize any of their roads being closed. They have not. Now, they started on this travel management plan, I believe, in 2002. They've had a long time to work on this and work out their strategic approach and give it a lot of thought. About 3 weeks ago, the U.S. Forest Service came in, dropped off a book that's almost 2 inches thick with four maps. And I told him, I'm leaving for 2 weeks for a vacation. And he told me, you got 45 days to read it, digest it, and make a decision. One of the decisions is to do nothing at all, so meaning they can't close any roads. But then I was told that's not really an option. You know, and I think Sheriff Palmer, I think came up with a very good idea. I think it has a lot of merit to it. The shoe belongs on our foot, not the federal government. The 10th Amendment is being violated big time. So we need to write the MOU of what we want, and the commissioners of a county need to do the same. By their own rules and regulations, the U.S. Forest Service is supposed to coordinate with us. I've been in office 5 years. Nobody from the U.S. Forest Service even came and alluded to the fact that they had to coordinate with the elected official or me. It's in their own rules and regulations. So going back to what I said earlier, they're constantly violating their own rules and regulations. So,
yeah.
I'm going to
correct you on one thing, Gil, and I don't mean anything bad by it. Where you mentioned something about stand behind your sheriff, and I want them to stand with me. I don't want them behind me. I want them right here alongside. And we need to do that. As we did in Siskiyou County, we were side by side, and it was quite an event. I wish you could have been there with us, Gil. I know you had some other things going, but I knew you would have been there. But I think it's important that we get the people to join us and not be behind us, pushing us, but they've got to be right there beside us.
Well, I think if the people understand or they hear what we're talking about now, they can associate it with where we're at today, economically speaking. Our country is down the toilet. Now, who did that? Our central government, our federal government, put us where we are today. And we're trying to come up with ideas to fund us at the local level. You know, what bothers me, I hate being called part of the government, but, you know, and I say I hate that because there's three levels. You got local, you've got the state, and you've got the feds. Where does all the money go? It goes to the other two, not the locals. The locals are the ones that are boots on the ground that are going to be there to back you up. They're going to be there to come when you call for help.
Yeah.
And who does not get funded? The local level doesn't. It goes to the state, and it goes to the feds. And frankly, I believe they waste that money. I think it's spent recklessly. Maybe that's a bold statement, but I think we could do a much better job at our level because we're the ones that are here that respond to the people when they call for help.
What do you think about the question of deputizing a large number of sheriffs, you know, volunteer sheriffs or volunteer deputies, excuse me?
You're yesing Glenn or me?
Well,
regardless of what you want to call them, there is a liability issue, and you are subject to bringing in litigation, and it can cost hundreds of millions. I mean, it just depends. If you bring somebody in, they're not properly trained, And here in this county, I have a very, very weak law enforcement structure. I have 275 volunteers. I have, believe, about 20 that are reserves. They've been trained, and I feel very comfortable using them. But the 275, yeah, I want them standing next to us and helping us. But to get them all trained to a level that wouldn't rise to litigation for wrongdoing, you know, I there's no way I can handle that with the budget that I have.
Okay. Gentlemen, we've got a couple of other callers, and Sheriff Gilbertson, I'd appreciate it if you'd hang in here and with us and continue on the show and answer questions as well. Is it okay if I have a couple of questions come in?
Fine with me.
Area code 484, you have a live mic.
Hi, Terry, it's me again, Bill Ryle, and I appreciate all the sheriffs and what you're doing out in the West, and we hope that the sheriffs in the East get the idea. I would suggest that you look to the state constitution. The state constitution is what creates your position as sheriff and should control most things, and I think the state constitution has been forgotten. So I would encourage all the sheriffs and anyone else is listening to look to your state constitution back when it was originated, look at the history, and you'll find that sheriffs were here before there was a state, just like Red Beckman said. And that is what's supposed to control things. And it makes it very clear in your early documents, at least here in Pennsylvania, as to the authority of the sheriff and what the fact that that is, in fact, the chief law enforcement officer in today's terms, but the chief peace officer in the county. I think you all know that. But it's the state constitution, so it's both. It's the state and where the federal constitution has delegated authorities, limited authorities, they can do things. And most of what they do, from my experience over 21 years of studying in constitutional law, is that they do not have authority to do what they do. And I think you're experiencing that when they don't pursue something, because they ultimately would lose if you pursue it because they have no authority to act. And the sheriff's supposed to be their host when they come into your county. That's my understanding of the law.
Bill,
so it's great that you're doing it.
Bill, let me jump in. Do you have a very specific question you could ask?
Well, more of a statement, because I hear a lot of discussion about the federal constitution, and I usually don't hear about the state constitution. So my suggestion to you is to look to your state constitution and encourage others to do the same. And as I say, I appreciate what you're doing. I've followed what you're doing. I hope it does spread across and that the conference is a great success. So more than more
I,
of
I appreciate your comment
question.
In regards to the state constitution. But on a national show, it might be kind of hard to, because our constitution is going to be different than California's, but or anywhere else in the country. And I studied the constitution at the state level, and that's where our authority is derived from, is from our state constitution. And I have read it, and you know, like one of the other people said on there, you can read it and pick it up again and read it later, and you'll pick something new out of it. And that happens all the time. And it's a rather lengthy document, and there's some of it that I still don't understand, but I want to say it's Article 6 in the Oregon Constitution where we derive our authority out of. So I appreciate your comment and your call tonight.
Thanks,
and
Bill,
if I can
for
answer
your
that,
comments. We have area code 573 that has a live mic.
Hello. Hope this is not too echoey. I'd like to chime in on what the previous caller mentioned about the importance of the state constitution. But I think the public does not understand how the state constitutions of every state have been altered since the Civil War. And they've been changed so much, and likewise with the U.S. Constitution, that today's officials are upholding their oath to uphold the constitutions and not violating their oaths of office, because what they're actually doing is enforcing these altered state constitutions. And the public.
What's your name, 573?
Charles.
Charles,
yep.
Where are you calling from?
Kansas City.
Kansas City. Do you have a question for our sheriffs?
Well, so like, here's a constitutional question. Why did the people of Oregon take the surveyor's description of the boundary out of their constitution? It seems to me that now there's no state venue at all if they take out that boundary. Can you comment on that?
This is Gil.
I can. I'd like to make a comment on the regard between the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution. And what I'm dealing with here is a federal officer that is restricted and prohibited and at the federal level with the U.S. Constitution, and they're coming into the state and they're telling us what they can and can't do or what they're going to do
mm-hmm.
when they're in direct violation of the U.S. Constitution. And I think that's why the U.S. Constitution's kind of taken maybe a front seat in this, and we're trying to limit them by Constitution, that they don't have the power that they think they have, and that's where I'm stepping up and saying, you know what? What you're doing, being a police officer for the Forest Service, that's my job as the sheriff, and I'm trying to get them to back off. And that's where I'm thinking the federal Constitution is restrictive and prohibitive, and it only gives them, say, the size of a tennis ball, and they're trying to take the size of a basketball. And that's where I'm stepping up and saying, stop it and don't do that anymore.
And if I can add
well,
to that, Glenn?
Yeah, Bill Gilbertson, please respond.
Yeah, if I can answer part of that, too. There was a case that was down in, I believe it was Arizona, Judge or Honorable Jim Gibbons might have been the name. The case came up about the federal jurisdiction, and in that court case that was read back, they stated U.S. Forest Service do not have law enforcement authority, and it further stated that law enforcement will be done by the local law enforcement. Now, there was a study done, it's called the Eisenhower Document, or Eisenhower Report in the 50s, and in part of that, it also states that same thing. So in numerous different places, in fact, that document I drafted and I alluded to earlier, points these cases out, but they're not following their own rules and regulations, and they violated the 10th Amendment. The power of law enforcement belongs to the state and the people. It was not delegated to the central government. It was not delegated to them, therefore they're not allowed to just take it on their own. And that goes back to the root of my issue is, they've usurped the Constitution. They've usurped the Congress. But as far as the state constitutions, we live by it here as well. And then I'll take it one step further. We did some research to find out in 1859, the state of Oregon entered statehood. To do that, there has to be a vote of the people. There has to be, in fact, in the state of Oregon, there were 6 requirements to become a statehood. And then the governor had to be a part of that, too. Legislative bill, it was House Bill number 1, was actually kicked out. It was booted. We have not found, either in the state or in the national archives, any documentation that the people in the state of Oregon actually voted. So that brings up a huge question. Now, I have to assume that it was done properly. And my issue is we can't find any documents to back that up. So that's yet another issue. Further, we've got these national forests in our counties. Under Oregon law, a county has to make a vote whether or not that land can be turned over or used for national forests. There is no record of that being done either. I brought this up to one of the representatives in Salem. And he said he had an attorney research it. I don't have all the details to that yet, but his comment to me was, I don't understand why the U.S. Forest Service is even in the state of Oregon. So there has to be more research done on this.
You took the boundary of the state out. Now there's no state.
I can't answer that without taking a look at the Constitution, see if it's in there or not. I'm taking your word for it. I don't know.
And likewise, you should study the 13th and later amendments, where Congress creates its own citizens. And when those citizens travel into your state, the feds are going to follow them in there, is how they gain access.
I have a question on a different venue, if I could interject this. It's the question of public lands. I mean, I don't exactly know the history and exactly how this happened, but what is it, two-thirds of the western states theoretically are under control of the federal government, the so-called public lands. Are those lands actually owned by the federal government, or are they managed by them, or that they can, you know, just simply control how those lands are to be used?
You know what, Kirk, when you bring that question up, some of the stuff that I've looked at, this could turn into a long conversation. the federal government doesn't own anything, and the counties have a lot more say in what goes on those national forest system land than what people want to take responsibility for. They're supposed to coordinate with us, and our county board of commissioners or our board of supervisors can dictate to them what's going to happen on our forest and what's not going to happen. And the county courts need to step up to the plate and say, this is enough, and we're not going to put up with this anymore. And they need to come up with some kind of a resolution or maybe a political stand and pretty much say, we're done getting this shoved down our throat. You're killing our communities. You're killing our counties. You're killing our schools. And they just basically need to stand up and assert their authority and tell the Forest Service or the BLM that we're not going to play this game anymore. And they don't hold a deed or a title to it. The BLM might be a little different, but the U.S. Forest Service or the U.S. Department of Agriculture does not hold a deed or a title. And how they even got initiated to begin with, and if somebody was to go back and research how the Forest Service was conceived, how they got to where they are today and how they've turned the shoe around and told us what we're going to do and how we're going to do it, and we're going to put our police officers on you to enforce it. I cannot comprehend how we've got this far with a handkerchief around our eyes, and it's been basically shoved down our throat, and it's time we start turning this around and putting a stop to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. It seems to me that the land actually belongs to the sovereign state, so I'm really kind of curious. I mean, if, you know, there's that famous map that shows you what percentage of each state belongs or is it controlled by the federal government, and you know, there's hardly any anywhere east of the Mississippi, and there's hardly any in the central states. So then you get to the Rocky Mountain states, and boom, you know.
Some of the research that we've done is that the federal government was charged with disposing of these lands. And that was their duty and responsibility. And I think when they realized when whoever controls the land and the water is going to control the people. And I think when they caught on to that and they saw how valuable for the timber and the grazing and the mining and all of that other stuff, I think we started to see a huge change back in maybe the 30s, maybe the 20s. I don't know. I wasn't around then.
Well, I think California became a state after the gold rush around that time frame, so around 49. And I'm going to go back actually and put together the years because I have them in my files, what years each of these states was admitted to the Union. I have a sneaky suspicion some of this is occurring around the Civil War days.
Yeah.
It's called the FLETMA Act in 1976, and in there it's the only place that I found that actually says that the United States government will retain these lands, these public lands, and they're no longer to be disposed of. Now, that's right in the FLETMA Act. Here in Josephine County, I took a look to find out who holds titles to what. I could not find anything for the U.S. Forest Service for a title. Under the Weeks Act, the federal government can purchase private property. BLM has done just that. They own a few plots of land throughout our county, but not the U.S. Forest Service. As far as public land and public domain, there is a distinct difference. Public lands are lands that were either acquired by the federal government, either eminent domain, by purchase, by gift, and those lands are basically lands that have no title to them. They're free and clear of a title, so they're in trust. to the federal government. Now, let's say a miner, for example, files a claim, and if he follows the rules of that claim, that is removed from public lands and goes into public domain. Giving him, court case after court case, says that that's private property. And they're constantly, the U.S. Forest Service is constantly violating that. In fact, I talked about that Douglas County case. They had no right to come in and confiscate and destroy that man's private property. That man's private property. Agreed. So there's your difference, I think, between public lands and public domain.
That's good to know. I think we're going to have to, in the future, start to engage more people in the understanding of this question, because I think fundamentally we're all dealing with these, quote, public land kind of issues here, and the agency's assertion that they have total control over them, and I think that's a repeating problem underneath most of this.
It is. I'm going to have to bail out. I got some things I get done, so I wish I could spend more time with you, but thank you for listening to me.
We only have about 4 minutes left, gentlemen, and
I'd like to ask us.
Thank you very much, Gil. I have a strange question that perhaps one of you might be able to answer, and that is how far into space does your jurisdiction go above your county?
You're right. That's a weird question.
I don't think there's a limit.
I don't either.
The reason I'm asking
I don't think we're restricted. I don't think they can restrict us. We've been empowered, but I don't think we're restricted.
Well, if somebody's spraying a aerosol toxin into your sky over your county, do you have the authority to go after them?
Well, I certainly will.
You have a
anybody
service
that harms the people in
borrow?
My jurisdiction.
I don't know how we would do that. We just got a couple police cars. I don't know how we'd get to that one.
Oh, you haven't got the new style police cars, Glenn?
No, not yet.
I got props on mine.
Yeah.
Well, I got to go, guys. Thanks.
See you in a couple weeks, Bill.
Well, we've got about 3 minutes left, and Sheriff Palmer, I just want you to have the opportunity to make any closing comments that you'd like to share with our listeners.
Oh, boy. A lot can be said in a couple of minutes. You know what? I just have to reiterate that you try and get your sheriffs on board and get them educated and get them to read the Constitution, look at their oath of office and who they truly serve, if they're self-serving or they're serving the interest of people that are being detrimental to your county, and there's a process. You can either replace them or get rid of them, and it's either at the election time or at a recall. And I have to say, very very much like Gil Gilbertson said, I never ever thought I would be standing toe to toe with a Forest Service federal law enforcement officer and telling them to stop doing what they're doing. I am not a confrontational person, but I'm done playing along to get along. And it's watching our schools close, watching people unemployed, people committing suicide, the crime rate going through the roof. It's all an effect of our economy. And when our public lands rule what we do and what we don't do, and when there's people in positions at the local level at a federal office making decisions that are killing our community, I can no longer stand idle and see these things happen to the people that I'm sworn to uphold and protect them from this kind of behavior. And I take my oath of office very serious. And I'm kind of excited about the CSPOA conference in Las Vegas in January. It's a new approach for me. I've had Mac here twice speaking to our community and to my officers. It's just one of those things that we need to hold near and dear to ourselves is what we believe in and stand up for those things. And I don't think what I'm doing is wrong or illegal or immoral or against what the people that put me in office would want otherwise. I've taken a stand and I'm not changing my mind or my opinion. I'm here. And I plan on defending my oath of office and upholding it. So,
Sheriff Palmer, if I was in your county, I'd be proud to stand with you.
Well, I thank you for having me on the show tonight, and it's good to hear Sheriff Gilbertson jump in, and it's always a pleasure to be with Sheriff Mack as well. He's been kind of a mentor to me, and he's very well versed in sheriffs and their authority, and I don't think he has a bad bone in his body as far as what his motives are, what his agenda is. It's for right, what's for the people, and what's for our country. And if we don't stand up and put a stop to this, we're going to be in a deeper hole if we don't stop digging.
Amen to that.
I was there in the winter of 64.
Thank you, everyone.
When we camped in the ice at Nashville's door. 300 miles our trail had led. We barely had time to bury our dead. When the Yankees charged and the colors fell, Overton Hill was a living hell. When we called retreat, it was almost dark. I died with a grape shot in my heart. Say a prayer for peace. For the blood of Omaha's shores. 21 and scared to death, my heart pounding in my chest. I almost made the first sea wall when my friends turned and saw me fall. Still smell the smoke, I can taste the mud as I lay there dying from a loss of blood. Mother.
can't come home.
No, we can't go.